If you're perimenopausal and can't recall the name of your neighbor's husband, whom you've known for 10 years, you don't need me to tell you that perimenopause affects cognition. Roughly 44% of perimenopausal women complain of forgetfulness. Lack of sleep definitely has an impact. It's impossible to think clearly or function at work if you're exhausted. But inadequate sleep aside, memory and cognition problems are also specifically linked to the number of hot flashes a woman has. It's not controversial that taking estrogen during perimenopause and early postmenopause is going to help. But taking hormones to stave off dementia or Alzheimer's later in life is a different story. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause midlife and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. On November 10th, 2025, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Dr. Marty Makary, along with the head of the FDA, RFK Jr., announced that hormone therapy would, quote, reduce the risk of heart disease by 50%, Alzheimer's by 35%, and extend life by at least 10 years. 98% of women that are currently postmenopause never took hormone therapy, and now many of those women are in a panic because they think they're doomed to develop dementia. A lot of those women, prompted by Dr. Makary along with some menopause influencers, are requesting to start hormone therapy in their 60s or 70. And then there's the other group, younger women who are starting hormone therapy in the absence of symptoms because they've been told that hormones will prevent future dementia and a long list of other conditions that lead to an early or unpleasant demise. It is true that Alzheimer's disease is twice as likely to occur in women as men, and the brain is loaded with estrogen receptors. So questioning the role of estrogen in the development of Alzheimer's disease is legitimate. And if it is the lack of estrogen that increases risk, it's biologically plausible to think that hormone therapy might decrease the risk. So what does the science show? Well, in the Women's Health Initiative, WHI, there were a number of ancillary studies looking at very specific areas. One of those studies was the Women's Health Initiative Memory Study, known as WIMS. 7,500 women all over the age of 65 were enrolled. Women with a uterus were given either estrogen and medroxyprogesterone acetate, Provera, synthetic progestin, or placebo. Women who had no uterus were randomized to either estrogen alone or placebo. No one knew what they were getting. The women who took estrogen had an increase in dementia compared to placebo. The women who took both estrogen and Provera had a twofold increase in the risk of dementia. But again, 100% of women enrolled in WIMS were over 65. So what we learned is that if you start hormone therapy later, not only does it not lower the risk, it increases the risk. This period of time in the first 10 years after the menopause transition, or between ages 50 to 60, is referred to as a critical window. And once that window of time shuts, there is no opening it again, which is why it is the recommendation of experts that, yes, some women are candidates for hormone therapy after age 65, but it should not be started for the purpose of preventing dementia, and it should be avoided in women who already have a decline in cognitive function or who are at high risk of developing Alzheimer's. But then we get to the other group, the younger group, women who are within 10 years of menopause or under the age of 60. In the WHI, in women who started hormone therapy between the ages of 50 to 55 years, there was no increased risk of dementia later in life. Two other randomized trials tested the effects of estrogen and progestogen treatment on cognitive function in women who started treatment shortly after menopause. And just like in the WHI, in both of those trials, cognitive function was not negatively affected by taking hormone therapy. So really reassuring. Essentially, it appears that if you start hormone therapy early, meaning within 10 years of the menopause transition or before age 60, hormones will not increase the risk. But not increasing the risk is different than lowering the risk. And currently, there are no randomized placebo-controlled studies that prove that in the general population, women who take hormone therapy in the absence of symptoms will have a dramatic reduction in developing dementia or for that matter, cardiovascular disease. Okay, so where does the statement that hormone therapy will decrease the risk of developing Alzheimer's by 35% come from? Well, that statement is based on a 1996 study that looked at a population of about 9,000 women that were living in a retirement community in Southern California. Some of those women over time developed Alzheimer's, some didn't. And what they found is that the women who developed Alzheimer's disease were less likely to have used hormone therapy compared to the women who didn't develop Alzheimer's disease. Hormone therapy appeared to reduce the risk by 35%. Pretty impressive. But this was an observational study. They didn't take a group of people in the general population and randomly assign them to take hormone therapy or not take hormone therapy. These were women that decided on their own if they were going to take it. And we know that women that are offered hormone therapy and choose to take hormone therapy tend to have access to better medical care, tend to be healthier, exercise more, eat less processed food, and tend to be better educated. All things that are proven to reduce the risk of dementia. It's not the same as giving estrogen to a general population of women. So the fact that these women had less dementia and better cognition wasn't because of the hormones, but because of the characteristics that allow women to have access to hormones. In the science world, this is called the healthy user bias. And subsequent to that study, there have been much larger observational studies with very different results. A 2022 study in Taiwan with over 100,000 women showed a 35% increased risk of dementia with hormone therapy use. A United Kingdom study published in 2023 with over 60,000 women likewise showed an increased risk of dementia. A 2025 Danish study with 55,000 women found a 24% increased risk of dementia in both short-term and long-term use, including in young women who've taken hormone therapy for less than a year. Not good news for team hormone therapy, but in that study, there were some significant design flaws that may have skewed the results, particularly in young women. But clearly, the hormone therapy wasn't protective. It didn't decrease risk. So we have one 30-year-old study with 9,000 women that shows a 35% decreased risk of dementia in women who used hormone therapy. And we have three subsequent studies published in the last 5 years that include a total of more than 200,000 women from a much broader population that all show an increased risk of dementia. Dr. Mark Carey chose to quote a very old study with the fewest number of women because it made the point he wanted to make. And that, my friends, is the definition of cherry picking. Now, the way to eliminate the healthy user bias that's seen in many observational studies is by doing a randomized controlled prospective study. Women don't get to pick if they want to take hormones. Women are randomized to either a group that takes hormone therapy or a group that takes placebo, and they don't get to know what they're taking. There's another important factor. Older observational studies, the ones that are commonly quoted, look to see if over time women developed Alzheimer's disease. Newer studies measure markers in blood that are reliably predictive of developing Alzheimer's, a far more accurate way to measure risk. As an example, a marker for dementia called p-tau217 can be detected in the blood and predicts dementia risk up to 25 years in advance. So forget all those older observational studies. Now we have two large-scale randomized placebo-controlled clinical trials that used Alzheimer's disease blood biomarkers to compare women who used hormone therapy to women who did not use hormone therapy. The Kronos Early Estrogen Prevention Study, commonly known as the KEEPS study, is a multicenter clinical trial first published in 2005 that investigated the effects of both oral and transdermal early menopausal hormone therapy on cognitive and cardiovascular health. KEEPS participants are still being monitored, but the investigators now use blood-based biomarkers to predict or identify the early stages of Alzheimer's. Likewise, the WHIM study I mentioned earlier also continues to generate data, and like KEEPS, uses blood-based biomarkers. between Keeps and WIMS, there are more than 2,700 women that were randomly assigned to get hormone therapy or placebo. And these studies have lasted 15 years or more. And guess what? Alzheimer's disease biomarkers in the brain were no different in the placebo group than in the hormone therapy group. So hormone therapy that was started in women under the age of 60 wasn't harmful, but it also wasn't helpful. And just today, right before I tape this, my go-to expert when it comes to cognition and menopause, Dr. Pauline Mackey, alerted me to new data from WIMS that was just released this week, showing that using the p-tau217 marker I mentioned earlier, it was the women who were randomized to the estrogen plus progestin group who were at heightened risk. And speaking of Dr. Pauline Mackey, she should be the one explaining this to you instead of me, but she was too busy globe hopping and giving lectures all over the world on this topic to jump on my pod. Today, I think she's in Copenhagen. But if it weren't for the work of Dr. Mackey and her colleagues, I would not have been able to share this information with you. So even though I'm the one doing the talking today, she gets the credit. And that's why the Menopause Society and experts that I trust, like Dr. Mackey, say that we should not take hormone therapy to prevent dementia. The research doesn't back it. And while I'm on the topic of hormones, there's also no data that shows that testosterone supplementation will prevent dementia or improve cognition. A study published last month by testosterone expert Dr. Susan Davis found that there was no association with a decline in testosterone levels and cognitive function in women over the age of 70. So if hormone therapy isn't the answer, how about just popping a little Prevagen? And the original Prevagen ads claimed that a daily dose of Prevagen would rapidly, quote, improve memory, support healthy brain function, and result in a sharper mind and clearer thinking. I mean, who couldn't use some of that? And if you had any doubt about its efficacy, you would hear testimonials from countless older folks who attributed their superlative cognitive ability to Prevagen. Except for one problem. There was, and is, no proof that Prevagen helps brain function in any way. So let me fill you in on the so-called science behind the number one best-selling brain supplement in the country. Well, the company references a small study to support its claims. The Madison Memory Study was never published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal, never replicated, and most importantly, showed no statistically significant changes in brain function in any of the 218 adults who took Prevagen outside of a small subgroup of healthy individuals with no cognitive impairment. The primary ingredient in Prevagen is apoequorin, a protein originally derived from jellyfish. But let me fill you in on a few fun facts. For starters, jellyfish don't have a brain. No brain. They have a nerve net that drives basic functions, such as moving towards light and swimming. In a specific species of jellyfish, Aquaria victoria, apoequorin is responsible for emitting a green light, which is very beautiful, but not relevant. But none of this matters, because 90% of apoequorin is broken down in the gut in less than 1 minute, so it doesn't even reach the human brain. The bottom line is that it's not biologically plausible that taking Prevagen would facilitate memory or cognition. In 2017, the Federal Trade Commission and the New York State Attorney General filed lawsuits against Quincy Bioscience, the parent company, for false and deceptive advertising. And after years of bouncing around the court, in 2024, New York Attorney General Letitia James ruled that Prevagen could no longer make claims that their products improve memory or cognition or are clinically proven to work. She stated, quote, "Companies and individuals cannot lie and manipulate consumers. Quincy took advantage of the very real fear of cognitive decline and preyed on elderly New Yorkers to make a profit. As a result of the ruling, Prevagen can no longer say in advertising or on the product itself that it will improve memory or cognitive function. But that doesn't stop them from selling it. The original tagline was Prevagen improves memory. The branding is now Prevagen for your brain. Nowhere on their bare bones website does it say what Prevagen will do for your brain. The tab labeled Why Prevagen simply says, Prevagen is a unique supplement for your brain. The tab labeled The Research Behind Prevagen lists safety studies, not efficacy studies. And by the way, all of the safety studies were done using rats, not humans. So good to know it won't hurt the rats. And then there are the testimonials, which are all glowing. I've been using Prevagen at least 6 to 7 years, and I wouldn't be without it. It's a great product. Have been using Prevagen for 4 years. I highly recommend this product to everyone. It really helps. I saw a commercial 2 years ago and decided to try Prevagen. After using the regular strength, I switched to extra strength. I'm satisfied with my results. I attribute it to Prevagen. None of the testimonials mention memory, thinking, or even the word brain. Listen to the commercials they play incessantly on TV. They only say it works or it helped. Helped what? But this lack of specificity does not stop consumers from thinking that it will improve their memory and stave off future cognitive decline. The original claims are so firmly embedded that there's no need to say what it does. We've seen this before. When Airborne first came to market, it claimed to prevent colds. After they got dinged for false advertising, because Airborne does nothing, and settled for $23 million, they changed their claim to Airborne, quote, boosts your immune system, which is completely meaningless, but implies that it will prevent you from getting sick. No matter, the original claim is solidly cemented in people's heads, leading consumers to believe that Airborne will prevent colds, the flu, and other infectious diseases that might be flying through the air, and it continues to sell like hotcakes. Another product that got nailed for making a false medical claim was the Jade Egg, one of the many worthless products in Gwyneth Paltrow's lifestyle brand, Goop. The Jade Egg, when placed in the vagina, initially claimed to balance hormones, increase bladder control, regulate menstrual cycles, and prevent depression. No wonder this egg was a bestseller. Needless to say, the only thing a Jade Egg did was deplete your bank account by $66. After the California FDA dinged them in 2018 for making false claims, Paltrow paid a paltry $145,000 in penalties, which is probably what she spent on her last vacation. And until recently, the site continued to sell Jade Eggs, claiming that the egg would, quote, harness the power of energy work, crystal healing, and a Kegel-like physical practice to bring, quote, joy and well-being. Now, even though she is no longer selling her egg with unsubstantiated claims about curing depression and balancing hormones, it doesn't matter. Thousands of women still buy them on other sites. And if you miss my rant on Nutrafol, another product that's taken advantage of the no need to prove efficacy FDA loophole, the link is in the show notes. So how did these companies get away with it? The FDA doesn't regulate vitamins, herbs, or dietary supplements except to ensure basic safety, and that over-the-counter products don't claim to treat a specific illness. So a company can't say that their nutraceutical will treat hypertension, but it can say it will support healthy blood, which is why the FDA requires all supplements to have a disclaimer stating that the product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. So if hormone therapy and Prevagen won't stave off dementia, what will? Well, I'm personally very interested in knowing, since my family members that didn't have an early demise from cardiovascular disease pretty much all ended up with dementia. So there are non-modifiable factors, things you can't change, like your age, your genetics, and a really stressful world. So I'm kind of screwed. But fortunately, there are modifiable factors you do have control of, and Alzheimer's experts emphasize that addressing these modifiable risk factors might prevent or delay up to 50% of dementia cases, which happens to be more than 35%. Just saying. For starters, it's clear that if it's good for the heart, it's also good for the brain. So you need to control high blood pressure and diabetes and get off your butt and engage in some kind of moderate exercise at least 2 hours per week. Ditch the ultra-processed food, and maintain a Mediterranean diet, which will help lower cholesterol and also help to maintain a healthy weight. Super important, since there's a high association with having obesity and dementia. Depression's a risk factor, along with cigarette smoking and binge drinking. Social isolation is a big one and not emphasized enough. Between working from home, shopping online, and scattered families or families that just don't talk to each other, many people go days with minimal or no human interaction. Having casual conversations is just no longer part of day-to-day life. There are people who don't even go to the grocery store, and if they do, there's a good chance they don't interact with a human cashier. So it's really important to proactively find groups to hang out with. I hear Mahjong is making a comeback. Book groups, walking clubs. Have a conversation with your Uber driver. I mean, some of them are really interesting people. I write for the Ethel by AARP, and there's an Ethel Facebook group that sets up gatherings and meetings in every city. It also helps to challenge your brain by learning a new language, doing difficult crossword puzzles, and playing Wordle. Midnight shopping on your phone when you should be sleeping doesn't count. You need to protect your brain, which is why riding a bike without a helmet's a really bad idea. And also under that heading would be to, if at all possible, avoid constant loud noise exposure, like blasting your TV because you can't understand what anyone is saying and you can't figure out how to use the subtitles. Which brings me to hearing loss. Multiple research studies have found that untreated hearing loss increases dementia risk in middle-aged and older adults. A study last year of over 400,000 people from the UK confirmed a 42% increased risk for dementia in people with hearing loss compared with adults of the same age with no hearing trouble. But, and this is the modifiable part, there was no increased risk in those with hearing loss who used hearing aids. Okay, my first reaction was, all right, so people who can't hear tend to be socially isolated or depressed, both risk factors for Alzheimer's. And I'm thinking it wasn't the hearing aids that decreased the risk of Alzheimer's. It was the ability to go out to eat without having to lip read and then nodding and smiling when someone just told you they lost their job and the dog died. But no, they factored it in and determined that it was a direct effect from hearing aids rather than indirect things such as social isolation or depression from not hearing. So while older studies showed the link between hearing loss and dementia, this was the first study that showed that hearing aids can mitigate that effect. So to wrap this all up, hot flashes and insomnia are not good for the brain. So if you're in that club, hormone therapy or one of the non-hormonal neurokinin inhibitors will not just help you get through perimenopause and early postmenopause, but appears to also decrease long-term risk of dementia. But taking hormone therapy in the absence of symptoms to prevent long-term dementia has no science to back it up. But there are action steps you can take that will make a real difference and significantly reduce your risk of developing dementia and also heart disease, which in turn will add years to your life. Or you can go the Prevagen route, and in 30 years, you'll be out $20,000 and as smart as a jellyfish.